Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Monday evening, February 21st, 11:09:30 p.m. Eastern. That means it is time for the Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined up top here by John Tytel and John Stalica. Down below me, Joby Fortson, and at least a picture of David Griggs. Thankfully, maybe we're not sure if we can see him.
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay. I'm here. Maybe he's here, maybe he's not. This is the Hoops HD report, though. We've got a.
Hey, Chad, let me know when we get started.
Okay, I'll tell you in about half an hour or so. Okay.
Okay.
You can actually just leave for about an hour, maybe come back.
Okay, we'll start great. Okay, great.
this is the Hoops HD report, though, where we've got a lot to get to. And I think before we even get to any game results or what happened with the bracket reveal over the weekend, the bracket preview reveal, I guess, over the weekend, I think we should start off with the University of Michigan, their game against Wisconsin, and the little incident with Juwan Howard. We just heard a few hours before we started this podcast, the suspensions came down. Juwan Howard is suspended for the rest of the regular season. He will be back by conference tournament time. Phil Martelli takes over as the interim head coach. Also, Diabite and Williams will be out for their next game, hosting Rutgers. Neath is out for Wisconsin for the next game at Minnesota. Greg Gard, a $10,000 fine. Howard gets a $40,000 fine. Tytel, let me start with you. Ugly, ugly incident. Your thoughts on what happened?
So I did some digging into Juwan's background, and we're talking about a guy. He was an honor student in high school. He visited hospital patients when he was a player at Michigan. He was not implicated in the huge Michigan basketball scandal during the 90s. 2010, he won the NBA Cares Community Assist Award, and he's the defending National Coach of the Year, which is to say he's not an evil, horrible human being based on his background, and he knows how to coach. That being said, does not excuse in any way, shape, or form taking your arm and scratching or swiping at the head of an assistant coach or anybody for that matter. The reason he was having his guys press in the final 30 seconds of a double-digit game they weren't going to lose is because he's a good coach who's ultra-competitive. Again, not to excuse it, but to explain, I think, why he did it. And if I was coaching and another coach called two timeouts in the final minute of a double-digit game, I'd be pissed too. I wouldn't take a swing at the guy, but I'd be pissed. I think the suspension of five games for the rest of the regular season is proper. I'm dying to see if they end up facing Wisconsin in the Big Ten tournament, but I'll leave it there.
Well, you know, I mean, one thing is that, and what point that Greg Gard made was that one of the reasons he called timeout is because they were facing a shot clock violation. And if you call timeout, the 10-second count, not a shot clock, but a 10-second violation, the 10-second count resets. It's one of these stupid rules. I don't think it should reset for that reason, but it does. So there was a strategic reason to do it, to avoid a turnover. And if you're coaching a press, why not coach to defend a press? And that's a way to defend a press, John, is it not?
Yes, I agree. And I wish that I like that Gard put in his bench guys towards the end to get them some playing time on national TV. I wish they had practiced how to beat a press more. And to be honest, I kind of wish that Gard would not have called the timeouts. I understand he's protecting his guys. He doesn't want them to commit five turnovers in the last 30 seconds, but they were going to win the game. And ugly, ugly incident. As to whether or not you should do a handshake or not, that's a related but separate topic that I'll leave for somebody else.
Right. Well, Joby, let me go to you on this, because Gard did get a $10,000 fine, because you did see on the replay, he did grab Howard's arm, which kind of helped escalate this whole thing.
Yeah, no, if there had not been, ironically, if it had been the rude blow-by handshake thing, we wouldn't be talking here today. But Gard had to put the point in, and, you know, Gard got a $10,000 fine, which is a fraction of his salary, his million plus salary. So it's not the, you know, it's a parking ticket for him.
He won't even pay it. Whiskey will pay it for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And so as such, I actually think everything turned out probably the way it should. You know, the only question is, should Howard have been suspended even to the Big Ten tournament and longer? I'm kind of there of just, you know, if his, you know, ironically, is he banned from recruiting? Because Martelli's been doing the bench play calling anyway, so it's not like Michigan's going to miss a beat. I think everything, all's well that ends well in this, you know, mess of a situation. I will say one thing on Howard's actions, though, that is getting missed, Everybody's talking slap, slap, slap. No. Slap was just because he couldn't form the fist in time. Because he went through, he followed through, and he immediately moved it to a fist after the contact. I mean, immediately. He wanted to punch. So don't, it's not a slap. It's slap in execution, poor execution. But he wanted a full-blown swing and punch. So that, you know, if, to the degree that that does make a difference, that was the intent as I read it. But we'll see how it, we'll see if John says if Wisconsin and Michigan play each other. Michigan, we'll get to it in the rundown, has a lot to play for right now because they are one of those six, seven teams right at that bubble.
Right. Slika, just want to give you a chance here. Any other further comments on this whole situation? And I'll give Griggs a chance too.
I think the only one of the main reasons Howard hasn't been fired on the spot is, unlike Woody Hayes, he did not take a shot at an opposing player. It turned out to be an assistant coach. I've also looked at similar suspensions for not equivalent, but somewhat similar incidents. Let's not forget a few years ago, Jamal Reed for Oregon State gets a 4-game suspension from his school for tripping a referee. Not accidentally,
to be fair,
but intentionally.
That was hilarious.
But still intentional.
Yeah.
And then you go back about 10 years ago to the crosstown brawl between Xavier and UC. The UC guys got 6 games, I guess, the worst offenders, including Yancey Gates, I guess, also for drawing blood and instance like that. So might want to, the more I think about it, maybe we give Michigan the benefit of the doubt, but certainly not a positive trend, but also not the first time that Howard's been involved in a shouting incident with other coaches.
Well, Howard's just upset he doesn't coach at Duke because their fine for tripping another player is only half of a game against Pitt.
Griggs, real quick, anything further? Let's we got because
well, yeah, I was kind of shocked that this happened, and there's been altercations. We've seen fights before, and we've talked about fights before. I think like last year or the year before, I guess it was 2 years ago, the what happened between Kansas State and Kansas. And I've always kind of taken the position that I'm for a corrective action without booting a player from the team. But this is the first time that I can remember a head coach actually physically struck somebody from the other team on national television. And watching it, I'll be honest, I turned the game over. I made a little joke about that in the write-up today, but I honestly didn't see it until the replays came out. And it's just like, my goodness, what provoked him? What did he say? Did he insult his children? Did he insult his wife? Did he use a racial slur? And then we go to the post-game press conference and he's like, well, I didn't like how they called timeout.
I just don't think he wanted to go to Culver's
like
after the game.
How old are you? It's just what I was thinking. And yeah, I know we got to move on. I just don't think there's too many people that could go to work somebody.
Griggs, that's it. I'm calling timeout on you.
What?
Let's move on, though. And the other big news on Saturday was the NCAA Selection Committee gave us its bracket reveal. I'm going to put their seed list here up on the screen. And Tytel, you are a Selection Committee guessing expert. What did you think about the 16 teams that were shown on Saturday? As we know, some of these teams have already lost since then. So,
yeah, seems pretty solid to me. I think that there's no glaring weakness that I see. If Joby finds one, I'm sure he'll let us know. But I mean, I think that the one seeds look good, although you could certainly, I've heard Kansas, Kentucky floating around. Baylor's currently losing, so they might be dropping a long way from the 2 line. And Houston's not on this line, I heard, because of the lack of quad one wins. So overall, I think it was solid.
Yeah, Joby, I think one of the bigger surprises to me was Providence down a little bit lower than most people thought they would come in.
Right. Well, and it's in line with where like Bracket Matrix had Providence, I might add. But I feel like a lot of the times Bracket Matrix has that lower. If you look at those that have lowered Providence and Bracket Matrix, it's people who take the net and literally treat it as a seed list. you know, and say, oh, you know, yeah. And maybe the committee, this could be a hint. And I know, Chad, you have a different theory to it. This could be a hint that the committee is looking at net a little more. They did it last year, but that's also because you had a lack of interconference play. So that last year you saw it, plus it was the new formula. We'll see if lower nets or higher nets pull teams up, lower teams down than they otherwise would be. The other team that I point, Tennessee surprised me on the three. To be honest, not that they're undeserving, but Tennessee surprised me on the three in favor of Wisconsin, that Wisconsin team that beat Juwan Howard, or Providence. And so it's negligible components though here. The ones are right, the twos are right. Yeah, you know, so it's, I think the committee did a very solid job.
Yeah, real quick, my theory on the Providence is it could also be the committee just looking a lot deeper into the resume, because two of their best wins at UConn, at Wisconsin, it was UConn without Sanogo, it was Wisconsin without Johnny Davis. So you, maybe they just didn't get as much credit for those wins also. But either way, that was the bracket reveal. Like we said, a lot of these, some of these teams, including Auburn, have already lost. We'll get to those games here in a minute. But
another thing to keep in mind. Well, let me finish on Providence, though. Yeah. A lot of their victories have been within 5 points or less. It's actually pretty reminiscent of Xavier back in 2018 when they got the one seed. They weren't blowing teams away. They were just scraping on by. And we'll get into Providence a little bit later.
Yeah, and let's go from there. Let's do a blind resume also too tonight. We've got we're gonna squeeze one in here.
I love doing these.
We've got a lot, but we do like them. And so, Griggs, let me start with you. Here is a blind resume, and tell me left or right, which profile do you like better, if either one?
Can you give me a third one?
The answer could be, well, just which is better. If you think they're neither one's an NCAA tournament team, which is could be the case.
Okay. The one on the right certainly tops out a lot higher. The net is atrocious. I know who it is because you've been all over this team pumping for them, even besides their bad net. I don't know who the one on the left is.
I don't think it's the
thing. I know who the one on the right is now.
Okay.
Let me see if they're, I mean, if it's an Atlantic 10 team, I know who it is.
Well, let's go to Tytel. Do you think it's the team on the right or the team on the left, or we just send both these teams home and get rid of them?
Send them both home.
No, I mean, an OAR 68 on the right is certainly nothing to write home about. But on the left, we got problems with the non-conference strength of schedule, which is outside the top 300. And we have a home court hero that's 13-3 at home and 2-7 on the roads and is on a 5-game losing streak versus the 5-game winning streak. So they both have some big problems to overcome.
Well, the team on the – we almost didn't have a blind resume because the team on the left almost just before we started the show picked up what would have been by far their best win of the season.
Yes, of course, that's Indiana.
It is Indiana on the left there.
Indiana is out of conference. Adventure. Wow. Yep. That is
and it is the Bonnies on the right there. And Joby, you know, the Bonnies, like Tytel mentioned, a 5-game winning streak and suddenly are you know, a little bit back in the picture here, aren't they?
They're in the picture. I do think that they're in the picture. They're out right now. And I don't know what else they can do. I mean, you get a nice VCU win, maybe. I don't know if they have enough to climb fully in, you know, for them. Indiana, after the loss tonight with Ohio State, and that's not an embarrassing loss on the road to Ohio State, but what it does is it starts to pile upon itself, and then you all of a sudden are looking, ooh, you better win your next three. You can get away with a loss at Purdue, but if you don't win all of your next three, you got to beat Purdue because they're right on the edge. They are on the razor's edge, and as it were.
Yeah, Chad, can we go back to those or the Bonnies in particular? This might be a question for Joby. I can normally look at a team whose net seems a little out of whack and immediately identify what that is. A decent out-of-conference strength of schedule, a decent overall strength of schedule, a resume that tops out reasonably well, two neutral floor wins against tournament teams. Some losses that smell kind of bad, but nothing that smells so atrociously bad that it makes your eyes water and you have to leave the room. Why is the net 85? I just don't see, like, the predictive metrics look okay. Why is the net so poor?
When the Bonnies lose, they get blown out.
I think it's these two games I'm highlighting here, Griggs.
Yeah. That's it. That's it. That is the biggest issue. And you can also see, I believe the net tracks KenPom very, very closely on those efficiency ratings. And hello, Net and KenPom are within a one spot of each other. That is not, I think, an accident. They've tried to emulate KenPom. I think there's good and bad to that. Hey, we all love KenPom, but I think that KenPom has gotten them wrong. I think KenPom has gotten Chad's Rutgers team wrong. I think that KenPom's gotten my Virginia Cavaliers wrong. So we've got to be careful not to use it as a ranking tool. A sorting tool, yes, but a ranking tool is very dangerous. I hope that the NCAA committee has not jumped that. That's why I laid that groundwork on Providence in the beginning of the show.
Okay, okay. Let's move on to the Big Ten Conference here, though. And other than Indiana, who we've just discussed a little bit here, in terms of the rest of the conference, Salika, let me start with you. My Rutgers Scarlet Knights, huge win against Illinois, did go to Purdue last night, lost the game, although probably not as I think they played a lot worse than the final score was, quite honestly. They were almost in it very late, but couldn't make that one last big run. But what about Purdue now? Just sitting here at 13-4 in conference, 24-4 overall.
One thing that stood out as a surprise to me initially was this was actually Purdue's first win against Rutgers since 2019. So I can't recall the last time we've heard a Big Ten team go 3 years without a win against the Scarlet Knights. But also keep in mind they had that, what is that, I think 4 wins in a row against top 25 teams before finally falling to Purdue right here. And with Ohio State, at least they're a game behind after in the loss column after surviving tonight. But there's clearly going to be a 3-way race between Purdue, Wisconsin, and Illinois as far as the top seed, and likely the 2 and 3 seeds in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and how about the Badgers, Tytel? They picked up the win at Indiana and a win over Michigan this week that we already discussed a little bit.
Yes, but it did get lost in the shuffle, Chad. I mean, a double-digit win over a Michigan team that's now looking like a Tier 1 victory is great, but nobody remembers it after the melee in Madison. They had the Minnesota Wednesday and then a dangerous game at that gym in Piscataway on Saturday. Still worried about their three-point shooting. 31% is not going to get it done. It has so far this season somehow. We mentioned Johnny Davis early on. He only scored 11 against the Scarlet Knights. He's back on track. 30 points and 12 boards against the Hoosiers. 25 points and 3 blocks against the Wolverines. I have them as a 3 seed.
Their resume is incredible. It'll pop up here in a second. I mean, the win at Purdue, a win at Michigan State, a neutral floor win against a Houston team that's fading. But the date of that game, Houston was at full strength for that game. That is just, I mean, to have that many wins against protected seed, we'll go with protected seed caliber teams away from home is just outstanding. And suddenly the home loss to Rutgers isn't looking as bad as it did for a minute.
Now, one thing we're not discussing is beating Michigan State home or away is starting to become a pastime. What's happened to Sparty of late?
Well, when you look at their tournament history, they've just realized that they have a much better chance at a Final Four run if they're a 7 seed.
I'll put Michigan State up there on the left, but Joby, how about the team on the right? The Iowa Hawkeyes finally stopped being an ACC team this week,
yes.
Right?
Oh, what a win.
Finally, and Ohio State, by winning tonight, showed that it's not just a case of Ohio State starting to lose at home all the time. Iowa, congratulations. You just punched your ticket. I mean, that was the win that punched their ticket. And heck, they even are in the rankings in one of the two polls. So Iowa had been basically doing a better version of the North Carolina impression. No more. Ohio State, Iowa is in. They deserve it. And you know what? The three-point shooting that John mentions, wow, when we go to Iowa, that's a different story and a different statistic because Iowa's doing quite well in that category.
I'll tell you what, we can even show the statistics here, a little thing we've never shown before, but we got the three-point shooting.
Oh, look at this. Look at this.
Iowa actually three-point shooting is 34.6%. But they're not great on Iowa.
They make
actually.
A lot of them.
They make a lot of them, but they shoot a lot apparently because they are it's only eighth in the conference, 138th in the nation. So Little tidbits here we don't normally show on the screen, but here's the upcoming schedule. Lots and lots of good games, Stalika, for this week, including the Circle the Rutgers at Michigan, a shorthanded Michigan, a much needed game here for the Scarlet Knights, along with almost every other game on the list, correct?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to highlight in particular Ohio State and Illinois because the Buckeyes had been sputtering the past two games. They did survive tonight. Winning at Illinois would cure quite a few ills, but you want to also look out for Maryland because that's been a bit of a bear trap for some teams like Illinois as well.
And don't forget the huge Michigan State Iowa game tomorrow night as well. Griggs,
yes,
real quick.
Well, I was just going to say this Nebraska at Northwestern game. Nebraska in utter train wreck, getting rid of 10 miles. What was that? What kind of a noise is that?
That's me slapping. That's me going Juwan Howard on you. All right? Oh, okay. let's turn from there to the new unanimous by every single voter at both polls number one team in the nation, Joby, the Gonzaga Bulldogs, off of Auburn's loss, which we'll get to in a few minutes here, are now clearly the number one team in the nation. Is there any doubt of it, though?
I think they probably are, in my eye test, the number one team in the country. But I don't know if metrically they necessarily are. I know Auburn lost, but I think Arizona's got something to say. I think, and I know I'm on a limb on this one. I think Kansas, when you're leading that ridiculous Big 12 by the margin that they are, I think Kansas has an argument. But then you see them play, and you see them play against what is a pretty strong WCC this year, strongest I've ever seen from the WCC, and they are cruising through it. They are just slicing and dicing, very rarely getting a challenge. The Zags, I hope they're ready for March because, you know, I want to see them once again perform at their best then and not get caught unawares in the second round.
Yeah, I really think
that it's been a long time since that's happened. It's been a long time since Gonzaga's failed to go beyond the Elite Eight, really. I mean, they have just turned into a machine.
Yeah, and the Zags here have four games left at San Francisco, at St. Mary's, two semifinal and championship game in the WCC tournament. I think they're four games away from being the number one team in the seed list as long as they win these four. However, probably their two toughest West Coast Conference games are their two games left. And Titel, the second one, especially at St. Mary's, who just cracked the top 25 polls this week.
I think St. Mary's had one of the best weeks of anybody in the nation last week. Home wins over San Fran and BYU, somehow by identical scores of 69 to 64. They host San Diego Thursday before heading to the Big Bad Zags on Saturday for their senior night. Speaking of seniors, point guard Tommy Cousy from Mesa, Arizona, had not started a game since before Christmas. Coach Randy Bennett put him back in the starting lineup this week. He looked like Bob Cousy. Forget about Tommy Cousy. 22 points, 6 assists, 4 steals against the Dons, 25 points, 4 of 8 behind the arc, 4 assists against the Cougars. I have them as a 7 seed.
Oh, wow. Man, you do like them.
I agree with him. I think they could move up even to the 6th line at this point. Maybe even higher if they could beat the Zags. But
yeah.
But Griggs,
important team to talk about here. Yes.
How about that team I just pulled up on the left there, who I did a bracket this morning and I left them out?
Well, I mean, the eye test, the last couple of weeks, they've been making your eyes bleed. Now, they did rebound a little bit. I know it was a loss in their last game, but at least they didn't look absolutely awful at St. Mary's. It's tough to go in the St. Mary's. And when you look at the games that they had been sweating out against Pacific and losing the Pacific, actually, and they were just on a stretch where they looked absolutely horrible. While they didn't win the game, at least they looked like a tournament caliber team for the first time in about 3 weeks. But to your point, they are in trouble. And normally you would consider these bye game type, you know, level games that they have left, but they've been struggling in these type of games. It wouldn't shock me if they dropped one of them. And if they do, are they out? I know you're not trying to guess the committee. I do think the committee would still take them, but there's reason not to. What do you think, John? Where you've been putting them, Titel?
I've had them right around like 10, 11, 12.
Yeah.
I think I have them out, though, as of today because of everything that Chad just said.
Yeah, and if you look at this, even if they they gain nothing by winning these last two games. They're going to have to do something in the West Coast Conference tournament. I think they're done if they, even if they win these two, unless they make a run in the WCC tournament, beat somebody big.
This isn't 1990 or even the 80s when we're talking about Pepperdine and LMU.
Very much not.
BYU needs to do something for the mere fact, and we'll talk about this with a lot of teams. I'll use the Big Ten example in Chad's team, Rutgers. Rutgers has been winning games. There will be other teams. Maybe Kansas State goes on a run. Maybe Virginia goes on a run. There are teams that will do this. We don't know exactly who they will be, but if BYU just stays in, I actually think they're like the last team in or second last team in right now, but there will be either bid thieves to push them out or teams that will come from behind, like a Florida, et cetera, that will take their spot from them if they do not perform.
There is the, on the screen there is the balance of the conference schedule for the rest of the season, actually, in the West Coast Conference. Their conference tournament season, regular season will be finishing up on Saturday with those last five games. Let's jump over to the Big 12, though, the number one team, number one conference here in the nation. Joby, let me stick with you and maybe talk a little bit more about these Jayhawks up top there. They picked up a road win at West Virginia this week and now are the number one team in your J&G ratings.
Yeah, now that's a surprise even to me when I saw it. But if you pull up the resume, it is just typical Kansas strong. That top left is always something they live. They just live there, it seems like. And they do what a number one seed should do. And then on top of that, on top of everything else, they're leading the Big 12, which I think most of us would agree is the top. I mean, look at that top, the top left. I mean, is that just disgusting?
I need to see a little more.
There are. But the thing is also, when you do that in a conference as strong as the Big 12, and you lead it by two games. I mean, this is an amazingly tough conference. It's a round robin, so no easy, oh, I didn't play Baylor twice. No, you are playing a rough and tough schedule. You're delivering on it. Kansas is certainly worthy. I know there was discussion whether they're worthy of the one line or not on the bracket reveal. Sorry, this team's a one seed, period.
Sleek, I want to give you, maybe Greg's also a chance to talk about this team I pulled up on the right, the Kansas State Wildcats, a team that's only 14-12 overall. Yet I think you both tried to call me to task for not including them in my field this morning.
Because you should have.
I'll go ahead and say right here, at least as far as Kansas State, I mean, the overall record is certainly going to be a little bit iffy. It's probably the bare minimum, but as long as you have wins against a protected seed like Texas on the road, throw that in with Iowa State, TCU, they don't have any ugly losses on here. So they need to be, I would say, if not in the field, they should be at the very least among the first four out, but I would have chosen K-State over a team like Florida or Michigan, for example.
Yeah, but Griggs, this team, they've got to play at Kansas and at Texas Tech still. That means I think they're going to the Big 12 tournament at best, still two games over 500.
Yeah, it's cutting it close.
To say the least.
Well, I realize that you normally don't see teams get selected that aren't. I think the lowest team ever was a few years ago when Vanderbilt got in when they were three games above 500. But the one thing I would like to point out about that is that they were a nine seed. They were three lines inside the bubble, despite only being three games above 500. To me, that indicated that had they even lost another game, it probably wouldn't have knocked them down three seed lines. And when you look at this profile, all of the losses, just about like you can, how many of these are to teams that are not inside the bubble? West Virginia, Oklahoma State, Ole Miss. A really, really strong profile. And when you start to look at the number of protected seeds away from home that they've lost to, you got to figure, well, had they not lost at Baylor and had they not lost on a neutral floor against Illinois and had they not lost to Arkansas, who's not a protected seed, but still really good. And had they played three more bye games instead, would the profile be better? I would argue that it shouldn't be. Now, again, I am not trying to guess the committee. I think the committee has looked at a profile like this in the somewhat recent past and valued it and not only selected a team, but gave them a 9 seed. It's more of a question for Tytel, but if you're asking what I think for the sake of our mock committee, yes, this team belongs in. Okay, they've done it.
Tytel, do you have any Kansas State close at all even?
It's hard to say they're that far away just because they got a lot in tier one, but they also got some tier two losses. And I don't think they're like super close, like last four in or even or last four out or even next four out. But if you win at Kansas or at Texas Tech, ask me again.
Okay. And Tytel, I also pulled up on the left there a team that we are not going to be discussing because they are nowhere close to the field because they're ineligible, Oklahoma State. But you want to discuss them a little bit, right?
If you want me to skip it, I will. But I think that we should at least mention them, not because they're going to be there, like you said, but because they might play a big role in deciding who gets there and what seed they are. They already have a better conference record than TCU and Iowa State and Oklahoma. They might have blown up Kansas State's chances with their overtime win last Saturday. They're currently leading Baylor by 7 at halftime. Then they get 3 more against Oklahoma, Iowa State, and Texas Tech. I just don't know what's happening with junior forward Keelan Boone. Last month, career high 17 points in a win over Texas. Did not play against Kansas State because Coach Boynton said that Woody Newton, who hadn't even scored a point since the first game in January, was more ready, and he didn't play tonight in the first half of the game against Baylor. So I don't know what's going on with the team.
Yeah, well, again, it's a team that's going nowhere, too. But I agree with you. They have a few more chances. They will not be playing in the Big 12 tournament either. So, but here is the upcoming schedule for the week. Huge game for Kansas State at Kansas Tuesday night. I don't think that they have any shot there, but we'll see. And then the big, big one Saturday, Kansas at Baylor. Texas Tech at TCU, you got a circle. Bedlam coming up on Saturday, really kind of meaningless at this point almost. Baylor at Texas next Monday night.
I'm sure Baylor will be happy not to see OSU in the conference tournament.
How about that for Baylor? Hosted Kansas Saturday at Texas Monday. Ouch. Especially if they're going to be coming off a loss tonight. Let's jump over to the SEC, though.
Big Monday, baby.
Joby, the big news in the SEC was Auburn heading to Florida and losing.
Oof.
Wow. And you're basically giving it – I mean, let's be honest. This is more about Florida than Auburn. Yes, Auburn showed some cracks. They haven't played quite as well lately, but Auburn's still, you know, deservedly so, still top four in the polls even post that game. Deservedly and on still on my one line, but they're not the top of my one line anymore. And so, you know, come on, Auburn, got to turn it back. You can't show that the beginning and the middle of your season was the elite part and then start to slip up at the end. They could be, if they start to play like they did against Florida, they could lose that to an 8-9, you know, very easily in the second round. Florida, on the other hand, all right, you had your chance and you took advantage of it because Florida had not done, as you can see, before Auburn, they had a neutral over Ohio State. They had that ugly Texas Southern loss, which was worse than what it even appears to be on this sheet. And so, Florida, you needed to do something. You needed to put things together. You have opportunities in front of you because you play in the SEC. And they did. And while I know Griggs will say, hey, give me more than one South Carolina road win, the fact is they're now back in the conversation. Are they in my opinion, right now? No. But they are in those first four out, next four out discussions, and they have Kentucky and Arkansas in front of them in the SEC tournament. And this is why I mentioned with the BYU case, they can play their way in and jump teams in the process. But they have to
You don't think they're in right now?
Let me ask the Tytel. You are the committee guessing expert here. What's up with – what's your thoughts on this Florida team right now? And are they in with that huge win?
So I thought they were done. They blew a four-point lead in the final 2 minutes of the loss at A&M on Tuesday, but then they saved their season, I think, with the win over Auburn. Please don't celebrate too early, guys. The Razorbacks are red hot and coming to town on Tuesday. They did make 10 threes against the Tigers, which is good for a team that's only shooting 31% behind the arc this year. And it was senior point guard Tyree Appleby. The previous two losses, he only scored 3 points combined. Picked a hell of a time to score 26 on 5 of 10 shooting from behind the arc against the Tigers. And Joby, I hear what you're saying, and it's hard to excuse the Texas Southern loss by 15 at home because you can't. But as of today, I have them as the last team inside the bubble.
Okay. Griggs, I know you want to talk about the team on the left here. Kentucky, interesting week. They go to Tennessee and they lose. They go to Alabama and they win.
Yeah, and I get
It was home against Alabama. I apologize.
Well, it was home against Alabama, yeah. And Tennessee, I mean, they didn't play very well. They certainly didn't shoot very well. They're not a particularly great shooting team anyway, but they were awful that night. And I think you have to give credit to Tennessee. But as much as I've been gushing over this Kentucky team and how much they've looked like a one seed, they did not look like a one seed that night against Tennessee. Having said that, I still think they are a one seed or should be. They've won at Kansas. They've won at Alabama. That's two wins against either protected seeds or teams that were, well, a one seed in the case of Kansas, at least by the committee standards, and an Alabama team that was in a discussion for it. They've swept them. I think that they could win out all the way through the SEC tournament. That's how good I think they're capable of playing. And minus the loss at Tennessee, that's how good they have been playing. And if they do that, I think they'll be on the one line.
Okay. Real quick, Sleeka, the team on the right there, Tennessee, also bit of an interesting week, beats Kentucky, but you go to Arkansas and you lose.
Well, Kentucky was also big in that they had gotten blown out by nearly 30 points back in January, so it was a little bit of a chippy contest in this one, but at least they get the double digit win at home. And Arkansas, it looked like they might have their chances, but they lose a rock fight to Musselman's Razorbacks here.
All right, so let's take a look here at the upcoming schedule. In fact, because we're trying to pick things up here, we've got a lot more to get to still, and we're already running way behind in time. Notable, I guess before we do that, though, real quick, Joby, LSU also, I don't know what they did on Saturday against South Carolina, but it was not what a team that looked like it was finally looked like things were turning around should be doing.
I was saying LSU was, all right, that's what a six seed looks like to me, you know, is what that profile. Loss to South Carolina, I actually don't think changes just too much, precisely because there's a huge drop-off about that point in the bracket. You know, we're talking about who St. Mary's could be their six or seven. That's right. They could. And the reason why is because they're climbing above that awful drop-off that happens around that point. So LSU, you're on notice for getting your white jerseys turned back in, but you still got them on right now.
Some big, huge, big games this week. Arkansas at Florida coming out tomorrow night.
Big win.
LSU at Kentucky Wednesday night.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
Auburn, Tennessee at Saturday is huge.
Big.
Kentucky
big,
at Arkansas big, Saturday.
Big.
Vanderbilt at Mississippi State Saturday.
I just want to see if Mississippi State gets a real road win as opposed to one they had at Missouri last night.
If you think Vandy at Mississippi State is big, you have a serious gambling problem. You need to call that whatever that 800 number.
Either that, or you're just a big baseball fan.
Yeah. Don't completely overwrite this. Write out this Mississippi State team. I still think they have a path, but they need to win both these games and do a.
Oh yeah, they finally
that.
won a road game. They went to Mizzou and won by two.
Griggs,
good job, Mississippi State.
Timeout, Griggs. No, okay. Big East Conference.
How come Chad never gets suspended for slapping me on the ear?
Tytel, one team that had a very good week in the Big East this week was UConn, with picking up a pair of wins.
Lost three of four to start this month. I was very worried about them, but they've now won three in a row. St. John's, Seton Hall, and Xavier. Huge game Tuesday. They host Villanova. Then they head to Georgetown on Saturday, and I'm not even going to go because – it's Georgetown. Great interior defense. 42% from two-point range allowed is number four in the nation. They do need more consistency from senior forward Tyler Polly. He had 24 points, set a career high when they beat Auburn the day before Thanksgiving. First six games of February, 20 points combined, then exploded for 16 points, 3 of 3 behind the arc, and 0 turnovers in the win over the Musketeers. I have them as a five seed.
On the right there, Stalika, we mentioned Providence at the top of the show with those little bit of a asterisk by the game wins at UConn and Wisconsin, but not a very good week when they lose to Villanova, albeit it was fairly close, but then they really should have lost to DePaul at home, and it needed a miracle to win the game.
Well, that's not even getting into the Butler game where they fell behind by 19 points, and you're thinking, are the Bulldogs going to get another scalp at home? But
I apologize. It was the Butler game I was thinking of, not DePaul. Thank you.
I mean, still, they had the struggles against DePaul, but unlike another team, they did manage to hang on and beat the Blue Demons.
Joby, I'm going to let you comment on the other team he's mentioned there. I'll put him over to the left here, Xavier. Xavier fans think this team doesn't even belong in the NIT right now, but...
lock it up, in the words of Wedding Crashers. Lock it up, because they are in. And they may not be playing very well. They may be a first round loser in like that 8-9 game, but or wherever they land, but they're in, because there's not enough opportunities for them maybe to mess it up unless they lose their next five. And even then,
Well, you lose this game March 5th against Georgetown.
Yeah. Win four of your next five, win one of your next five, and you're 18 and 13 at that point. They're probably still in with those nice wins over UConn, Ohio State, and company. So, the Musketeers will be going dancing. It's late enough where we can start to make these pronouncements. But when I talked about that drop off around the 6-7 seed line, 2-8, they're on the bottom side of that. They're why there's a cliff there. Teams like
now, what's still not clear for Xavier is going to be the health of a Nate Johnson right here.
That
I mean, he injured himself late in the UConn game, and obviously they missed him pretty significantly for both the St. John's and the UConn losses. Still not sure what his status is going to be for Providence, but it's eerily similar to last year where he was missing for injuries as well late in the year. And we saw how that movie ended.
Yeah, he's listed as questionable for the Providence game right now, so who knows what that means. But Griggs, one more team real quick. I pulled up Creighton on the right here. Had a very good week, including a win, including their second win. They now swept Marquette on the season here.
Yeah, and in exciting fashion, dramatic fashion at home, the one-point win. This is not a team that the prognosticators or the bracketologists seem to like. I'm trying to figure out why. I'm wondering if they're focusing too much on the net and forgetting that it is just a sorting tool. I don't see anything atrocious other than maybe the loss at Butler. And of course,
wait a second. They lost at home to Arizona State.
That's a problem. That's a problem. That's a problem, but it's not a disqualifier. They won at UConn.
Chad, Arizona State has three touchdowns against UCLA in the first half. So come on.
Yeah. You know, neutral against BYU, home against Villanova. I know it was at home, but that's still a very, very high caliber win because Nova doesn't lose much on the road. I just think there's far more good here than bad. I 10-5 in the conference. I mean, it's a good conference. I see way, way, way more positives here about UConn or about Creighton than not.
Yeah, and they're now actually above Marquette in the standings as well, and would hold a tie by two games. They would hold a tiebreaker over them, so it looks not looking good for Marquette to catch a top four seed in the Big East tournament at all.
Not to mention Xavier would actually be an 8th seed based on the current tiebreakers.
Oh wow! Yeah,
upcoming games here: huge one tomorrow night. Titel mentioned it already: Villanova at UConn. Also, want to keep a look at Creighton at Providence on Saturday. Seton Hall Xavier on Saturday. St. John's, Creighton at St. John's. Okay.
Well, it's a winnable road game. Okay. So,
Xavier Providence, we mentioned. Okay. Let's move over to the ACC now.
Johnny's getting a little bit hot right now. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They go 2-0 this week. We may actually talk about the Johnnies next week. Over in the ACC, which continues to only have one team in the top 25 poll in either one of the polls here. And I guess we. I don't even know, Joby, where to start. You are an ACC guy. I mean, is it just Duke and Notre Dame's in, and you know, maybe we find a way to squeeze one or two more teams in, or did we
I think we're looking at four teams in, assuming those the competitors for the spots don't stub their toe against like Pitt, North Carolina.
Okay, but if you want to
Louisville, which we almost did tonight. So I do think but you could have, hell, at one point on mine, I had three ACC teams in the play-in game. So that's kind of, but And North Carolina is very much in the same position that BYU is, because the resume is so bland at the end of the day. They need to win against Duke, for goodness sakes, to make it better, because they don't get a ton of great opportunities here, as you'll see when it pops up.
Let me do something with North Carolina here. Unfortunately, I have to scroll down to find their tier four loss to Pitt, but it is down there. Don't forget it.
But at least there's something good on their resume.
Well, it's Virginia is a bloated net team. We're talking about teams that have that I think are unfairly treated by the net. I ran through a bunch of them. I think Virginia Tech is being overly generous on their net. It's because you know why the Bonnies, net stinks and Virginia Tech's is good? Because Virginia Tech had one game where they beat the Bonnies by 30 or whatever it was. I mean, come on. You know, give me a break. North Carolina is that bubble team that will have their spot, like BYU, taken from them unless they go out and perform for it. But we'll see. I mean, I don't think North Carolina's in your field at the end of the day, but they're still hanging around.
Well, Stalika, on the left is Miami. And
I like this.
Is it time to start holding our nose at these four home losses? One of them to Notre Dame was a tournament team, but still four home losses that are tier 2B or tier 3.
Well, I think the fact that two of those losses are against Virginia and Florida State, who would be nice NIT teams right now, that's a bit of a problem Florida for the State. Canes.
Nobody wants Florida State.
Florida State's right a now. Mash unit right now.
Yeah, we're not even going to talk about what Florida State did tonight. But thankfully, they do have the wins. They do have the wins at Tech and Wake.
Virginia
Duke
matches up very well with Miami. It's an awful matchup problem for Miami. It really is.
Tytel, what about Wake Forest is coming up here on the right?
How about those Demon Deacons? Last second loss at Duke Tuesday, but they bounced back. 5-point home win over the Irish on Saturday. Three games left on the schedule, all winnable. Clemson, Louisville, NC State. This team only won 6 games all of last year. I think Steve Forbes is a strong contender, not just for ACC Coach of the Year, but National Coach of the Year. Great interior scoring, 58% from 2-point range, number 5 in the nation. He starts 4 seniors and a great junior in Jake Laravia. The Indiana State transfer, amazing last week. 19 points and 10 boards against the Dukies. 20 points, 9 rebounds, and 4 steals against the Irish. I have them as a 9 seed.
Greg, do you agree with him on the 9 seed here for Wake? I get that they finally have a good win, but it was at home against Notre Dame.
Well, the win at Virginia Tech, I think, was pretty good. I know Virginia Tech's not a tournament team, but I do think that they're a team that's hard to beat on the road. But other than that, no, the home win against North Carolina, North Carolina isn't particularly strong on the road. The win at Virginia is okay. I'm not really seeing much else that pops out at me. Now, there isn't anything atrociously bad other than maybe the loss at Louisville. But I just don't, while I agree that they are much, much improved, I just haven't really been that impressed by them to think that they're solidly in the field, much less all the way up on the 9 line.
It's too late to do it this year for Wake, but next year I'm going to highly suggest play the Skip Prosser Classic against Xavier. Don't waste your time playing VMI. That non-conference strength schedule of 334,
that's
very bad if they're going to be on the bubble.
And that's a great thing to say, John. That is a very good point. Because if Tytel's right, they're a 9 seed. The committee has ignored your non-conference when you're in that like 8, 9, 10 range. But when you start to slip, as Stalika pointed out, to 11 or 12, and you're starting to slice and dice on who deserves it or not, very often they will take the team. Hey, Indiana, are you listening? They will take the team with the 300-plus non-conference and say, bye.
Upcoming schedule
against Notre Dame was good.
Upcoming schedule here, we've got Duke with a pair of road games at Virginia, at Syracuse. Definitely worth circling those, at least on the schedule here. A few others probably worth watching as well. So let's go real quick. We've got 3 more
but
conferences.
About Wake, you know, do you have a sense of urgency? Do they need both of these, or a better way of putting it, how bad would it be if they lost one or both of them? To you, Tytel. Do you think they're locked in, or do you think that they need to at least hold serve against non-tournament teams?
It's a great question. I think that if they lose all 3, they're in big trouble. If they lose 2, they're in medium trouble. If they lose at Clemson, it's a top 100 net. I mean, I can see the path just because, but they better not lose.
Okay.
They better not lose.
That's also, obviously you've got the ACC tournament after that as well. See who they match up with, see what wins they get. But let's go quickly through the Pac-12 here, where I think we got to start with the Oregon Ducks, who did not have a very good week.
It's hard to feel good about a team getting swept in Tempe and Tucson, but I got to say, I've rarely been more impressed by a team in a losing effort than I was with the way the Ducks played on Saturday night. 11 offensive boards, 9 steals, 10 of 11 at the free throw line, and a 3-point loss to my boys, who are undefeated at home this season. Great effort. They also had a bunch of guys get banged up, so I hope they recover quickly because they got the Trojans and the Bruins coming to town this week. And Junior and Folly Dante, this guy missed 19 games as a freshman, missed 22 as a sophomore. But when he's healthy, he showed what he can do last weekend. 13 points and 15 boards against my very tall guys like Tubelis and Coloco. As of today, outside the bubble. If they beat either LA school, back inside the bubble.
Okay, yeah, I mean, my feeling from that Oregon game was almost that after what they did in Arizona State, which was awful, that this was almost their last gasp effort. This was their last drive for the NCAA tournament, and they did just come up short. So,
what does Tytel do with teams that lose to Arizona State twice in a season?
Hates them.
There's the upcoming schedule.
Arizona State's inside the bubble.
Arizona is at Utah and at Colorado. An interesting Colorado team, Joby, that's won 5 games in a row and you know, is not completely out of it, especially if they could beat Arizona this weekend. But
they need the high quality wins. I actually think they are way, way out right now.
Okay.
They have their chance to, like any team in a Power 5, they have the chance to play their way in. But they almost have to be playing on Friday in Vegas, you know, for me to say, oh, yeah, they're in.
Okay. USC and UCLA at the Oregon school. So there's 2 games at Oregon, obviously huge as well. But let's keep things rolling right along here. Quickly over through to the American.
Houston.
Houston went 2-0, Griggs, but you want to talk about them?
Well, okay, if we're going there, it wasn't exactly an impressive 2-0. And Wichita State is traditionally good. It's just this year's edition of them is not good at all, and they needed a couple of overtimes to win. And I don't want to overstate it. The job Kelvin Sampson has done this year, arguably coach of the year, because they've won as much as they have, as shorthanded as they are. But instead of just blowing through the league and blowing teams off the floor and making you change the station at the under 16 timeout in the second half, they've lost games and sweated out games, and you just kind of wonder what's happened to them. They don't look like a top 10 team anymore.
Well, I want to talk about this. If whether or not there is a second American team that can make the field and Stalika, here are Memphis and SMU. We'd like Memphis, especially with their win at Houston, but now SMU got the season sweep over Memphis. Where do you go between these 2 teams?
I have a feeling they were probably sending texts around the conference about bid collusion, but I feel like it's bid exclusion instead. I mean, it's nice that SMU has a pair of wins against Memphis, but when you're losing at Temple, that's going to negate it a little bit. Losing at Cincinnati this year, not good. Losing against Missouri and LMU back in November in a preseason tournament, that's almost a disqualifier.
Well, don't you got to disqualify Memphis then? Losing to East Carolina, losing to Georgia, losing to UCF.
Yeah, they might need a special waiver for losing at Georgia.
Tytel, how about the team that beat SMU before SMU beat Memphis, and that's Temple?
I mean, we're talking about a team that scored a whopping 49 points at South Florida in a loss 2 weeks ago, but when you're beating SMU and Cincinnati in the same week, you're back on track. They get several days of rest before heading to Memphis on Thursday. They're winning with defense, which is good because the offense is atrocious. They're outside the top 300 from 1-point land and 2-point land and 3-point land. But it's not all Coach McKee's fault. He's had to juggle this lineup this year. Khalif Battle, broken left foot. Jeremiah Williams, hurt his shoulder. Jake Forrester, illness. Quincy Adamakoya, suspended. I don't know how he's doing it. Luckily, he's only got 1 senior on the roster. So if they can ever learn to shoot the ball, next year I think they're a serious threat.
Here's the upcoming schedule. The games of note probably will be SMU and Memphis's games, and the big, huge game actually Sunday, SMU at Houston. If SMU has SMU wins that game, they've now swept Memphis and Houston on the season. Joby, I don't know how you leave SMU out at that point.
You don't.
Yeah, no. SMU is in this group, and ironically, when we're talking about teams who could take bids away, SMU, because they have the opportunity against Houston this Sunday, they can play their way at least into solid discussion. Don't slip up against Tulsa. But you can, if SMU were to make a run all the way to the AAC final or probably the semis against Memphis, they probably can find themselves dancing, assuming they get at Houston. But the at Houston game is a necessity, without something in the tournament, conference tournament, happening even greater. I think they do need that game coming up this weekend. But likewise, if you're
Houston, you cannot overlook Tulane right now. The Green Wave having their best season by far in the American.
All right, let's quickly jump over to the Mountain West. Griggs,
yes.
Wyoming, I don't know what they did on Tuesday against New Mexico. At least they bounced back with a front range win over Air Force over the weekend. But, you know, just when you break into the top 25 polls, you do that.
Yeah, and that followed a stretch of games where they had played really well, winning some showcase games at home, a lot of energy and enthusiasm around that program, and to go to the Pit, which is historically and traditionally hard to win at, but not this year, and lose, it was a bit of a setback. I like what Wyoming's doing. I think it was a setback. It wasn't a game ender by any means. I still think they're very, very far inside the bubble. Along with Boise State and along with Colorado State.
Salika, what about San Diego State, who
did have a good week,
picked up a pair of wins this week?
Yeah, winning at Fresno State is certainly going to help the profile a little bit. I mean, it's certainly better than what Colorado State did, completing the reverse sweep against UNLV. So
we'll get to that one in a minute. Yeah.
They're the telltale heart of this conference right now. Their heart is still beating. Barely alive.
Yeah. Where did you have San Diego State? I forget.
12 seed holding on for dear life.
Oh, okay. That sounds about right.
Five wins in a row for the Aztecs, so that does help. As he mentioned, though, Tytel, UNLV did complete the season sweep of Colorado State over the weekend. You want to talk about the Rebels a little bit, huh?
It's incredible. I mean, they were 11-9 a month ago. They also beat Fresno on the road and lost at Boise by only 6 points. They head to Nevada Tuesday and then have one of the hardest homestands of any mid-major team all year. They host Boise and Wyoming back-to-back. Ton of good players in this conference. I'll put 6'4 senior Bryce Hamilton up against any of them as the best pound-for-pound guy. Rebounds and assists are actually down from last year, but scoring is up from 18 to 22 points a game. Turnovers and fouls both went down this year. He improved his ball handling and his defense. I think this kid's going to play in the NBA.
Wow.
Let's take a quick look at the upcoming
series.
We have a huge game coming up, Griggs. It is not only the game, it's actually Wednesday. It's Wyoming at Colorado State. We've got a big one tomorrow night, also San Diego State at Boise State. So two huge games. But Wyoming, Colorado State is also a front range game on top of everything else. And it's a huge rivalry. And it's everything, correct?
And the front range auto bid is on the line here.
We followed that all up next Monday night with San Diego State at Wyoming as well. So this is a huge next 7 days in the Mountain West for all four of these teams, quite honestly.
Yeah, it really is. And especially with, as Tytel said, San Diego State holding on for dear life. They could, if they get a couple of these wins, I don't even think they need all of them. They can put themselves way, way, way inside the bubble.
Yeah, I guess we should just, you know, in terms of the front range, we could just show here. Here are the front range standings as we see Wyoming. They win this game. Front range championship with undefeated record there. Unless they meet again in the conference tournament. Yeah, that could happen.
Right, yeah. I think, which they could.
Atlantic 10, one last conference here. Stalika Davidson did go ahead and beat St. Louis over the weekend. So at least, you know, picked up a little bit, another win here. You're still on this team as being at large worthy if and in the field if they mess up the A-10 tournament.
If they mess up in the A-10 tournament, it's going to be very close. But by the same token, it is extremely difficult to get the double in this conference. I think the last time we've had a double and a team can only, well, only a one bid conference was back in 2002 when Xavier pulled the double and ended up getting a 7 seed out of it.
If wow, I'm a team like St.
Huh. Yep. If I'm a team like St. Bonaventure or Dayton, those would be my favorites to end up winning the conference tournament should Davidson split up.
And Tytel, we started the show with talking about the Bonnies. You had a few thoughts on them as well as we kind of circle back around.
Yeah, Chad, you already showed us the roller coaster of a season during the blind resume. They started 5-0, lost 7 of 14, but now 5 in a row and counting. 2 winnable games this week against Rhode Island and St. Joe's. I think they'll make it 7 in a row. And the only reason Coach Mark Schmidt did not panic when they lost 7 of 14 in the middle of the season is because he's got 5 seniors in his starting lineup, one of whom, Dominic Welch, been amazing during the 5-game winning streak. 18 points, 7 boards, 2 steals a game. As of today, outside the bubble, but forget about like playing their way in. I think that I would not want to play them in the conference tournament next month in Washington, D.C.
Hey, Chad, can we pull up 2 profiles real quick? VCU and Dayton.
I was going to go. I was going to ask Joby about it, but Griggs, you can go ahead and say it.
Well, okay. Well, I don't want to steal Joby's thunder especially, but like you start to look at these and it seems like every time I say that I think Dayton is coming on strong, they crash spectacularly and have a setback. But both of these teams hot right now. You see the winning streaks at 5 for VCU, 4 for Dayton. You look at what they've got left. Is there enough there? And I guess this is a question for Tytel and Joby. The way they're playing now, to me, that they look like when they play up to their ceiling, which they admittedly don't always do, and Dayton certainly didn't back in November when they lost the 3 home bye games, these are tournament caliber teams. These are teams that can actually knock off someone in the round of 64. Do either one of them or both of them have a path to get inside the bubble?
I actually think, is there a path? Yes, because the Atlantic 10 has decency, but they need a lot of help. They can't have that Florida team that we talked about. They can't have the San Diego State stay strong. They can't have Rutgers do well. There are teams that will be ahead of them if they perform, but they can fill the breach if they are the Atlantic 10 team, because I don't think both Dayton and VCU and the Bonnies, I think there's only going to be space for one of them at the end of the day, if at all. But one of them, I think, has that pathway if they can do it. It's interesting you say VCU and Dayton. I think their resumes are very different, but they come out at around the same.
Oh, they are, but
because Dayton is this crazy lose big, win big. And VCU's like, yeah, we're winning the games we're supposed to, except the Davidson win, I'll give them credit for. But yeah, we're winning the games. Well, we're not losing badly, because even a loss to Wagner is not awful this year, given Wagner's overall record. So, you know, it's kind of interesting how the committee will treat this. Opportunities in front. It can happen.
I think
I'll just jump in here. One quick comment, Joby. Wagner's profile is only so good as it is because they've beat VCU. So it's a little circular argument there on the Wagner point.
No. And not circular only in this way, Chad. They don't lose. I mean, Wagner's not losing in the NEC.
Give Tytel a quick chance to respond as well. Then we got to have to move on to one other team here.
I'll just answer David's question of, can this Dayton team beat a team in March? The answer is yes, because if you look versus the board, 6-2. And Chad, how many teams that are 6-2 against the board missed the tournament? I assume very little.
Very little, although, you know, some of these board teams that they beat are VCU, who's out, Belmont, who's probably on the bad side of the bubble right now. So I think when you look a little bit closer, the only solid tournament win they have, though, is Kansas. So the versus the board... Win. Also includes a win over Southern, who's the projected SWAC champion. So there's a little bit of an asterisk by that 6-2, though. You can't completely ignore Lowell, Lipscomb, and Austin Piatto.
No, you can't. Oh my! And had they won those three, which they should have. I mean, those are all sub 250 teams. That's like saying you should win home bye games. They're in right now.
One other team to quickly discuss: Stolica. The Murray State Racers up to number 19 in the AP poll, 21 in the coaches poll, on a 16-game winning streak, and coming in this week to their toughest remaining game before the OVC tournament.
Yeah, this was also a team that was playing with matches over the past week. Austin Peay was closer than it should have been. Their game at UT Martin, really closer than it should have been, and probably should have lost if not for a three-point play in the closing second. So
I got to scroll down to find that UT Martin game. There it is. Okay.
So Murray State is at least fortunate that they keep their winning streak intact right here.
Yeah. Griggs, this is a huge game coming up on the 24th. I think that's Thursday night where they're going to be hosting Belmont.
It really is. I noticed Tytel had them on his eight line. I think that that's where they'll be if they get this Belmont win. And if they win these next two games, I think they even – and they lose in the conference tournament, I think they don't only go in but go in on the first ballot.
All right. On that note, though, let's go ahead and pull this down here. I'll run through each of you for any other final thoughts of the evening. And Joby, why don't we start with you? Joby?
Coming strong. Great stuff, Joby.
Well, there he is. Yeah, it's okay. As I'm over and over at nauseam, we're going to see people, somebody is going to earn themselves a bid, and maybe multiple teams will earn themselves a bid. So once again, warning sign, if you are those teams kind of floating at the bubble without anything special, North Carolina, I'm talking to you. Indiana after tonight, I'm talking to you. If all of a sudden you're passed because SMU does go out and beat Houston and makes a run to the American final, you're done. SMU's in. Yeah. So I think what's going to be neat about this year is I think you're going to see those teams earn it. And I think the bubble is actually stronger than I've seen it in years past. I'll defer to Tytel ultimately. I actually think when you're talking about teams like Rutgers with all those amazing wins right at the edge, that's saying something about the strength of what's happening right at the bubble.
I agree completely. Stalika.
They're not going to be near the bubble this season, but South Carolina had themselves quite a week, though. They hit a half-court buzzer beater to win at Ole Miss last Wednesday, and then they hand LSU a pretty damaging loss last Saturday. They're going to have a home game against Mississippi State coming up this week, and if they're somehow able to win at Alabama, things could be a little bit interesting in the SEC conference tournament for Angry Frank's crew right here, but at least enjoy the week that you had.
Okay. Tytel.
So I'm going to go to Joby Land and give you a little ACC stat here. So the team with the longest active winning streak in America in Division I is Syracuse, 52 straight winning seasons since 1970. The good news, they beat Georgia Tech at home by 1 point in overtime tonight to get to 15-12 overall. However, they finished the regular season by playing each of the top four teams in the conference standings, Notre Dame, Duke, Carolina, Miami. If they lose all four of those, I'm not saying they will, but if, then they're 15-16 overall. Then they have a very interesting first round 8-9 game, possibly against a team like Pitt or Florida State, both of whom they've already lost to last month. And then they'll be 16-16 and face the top seed like Duke or Notre Dame to keep the streak alive. Good luck, Boeheims.
Good luck. Griggs, do you want to finish the show out for us?
Yes, I'd like to plug the show that we do on Wednesdays real quick and say that the best thing on television right now is the New Mexico State-Seattle game. They're playing it at Seattle. It's a fabulous venue, a fabulous arena that could be used as a racquetball court. It's so compact and small. We'll be talking about that and North Texas and Belmont's chances and everything else on Wednesday. And don't forget about the conference tournament tab up there. If you're an administrator, a player, a coach, not knowing where your conference tournament is, we got you covered.
We do. Just go right up there. That's where your conference tournament is. But on that note, on behalf of John Tytel and John Sleek up top here, Joby Fortson and David Griggs down below, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We will be back Thursday with Under the Radar, Friday with a bracket rundown, and starting Sunday evening with Championship Week video notebooks.
Wow.
How about that? Have a good night, everybody. Talk to you again real soon.